Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Eli Oakes is an emerging producer and DJ from Austria, now based in Berlin. Renowned for his unique blend of commercial dance and underground influences, Eli continues to push the boundaries of the genre. He has cultivated a strong following with nearly 1 million cumulative followers on TikTok and Instagram, and over 9 million monthly listeners on Spotify. In 2024, TikTok recognized him as the biggest DJ in Germany on their platform. His hit track, Running Around, peaked at number 32 on the UK's chart and number 33 on the German singles chart. Other notable releases include collaborations with A-Lock, the song Tsunami, Timmy Trumpet, the song Sound of the Police, and Lavinia, the song K.O., along with remixes for Marshmello, Nate Dogg, and In Parallel. Eli has made a significant mark in the live music scene, performing at iconic venues such as Ushuaia in Ibiza and prominent festivals like Ultra in Australia. His talent for seamlessly merging commercial appeal with niche electronic styles positions him as an innovative force in today's global dance music landscape. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Eli Oakes.
Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
So first of all, thanks for having me, man. It's a pleasure. I'm sitting here in Berlin right now. That's where I live. I literally just came back yesterday evening. Just been a week to Ibiza because there has been the big opening week, which has been wonderful. And I'm back and we have wonderful weather, so can't complain. How about you? Where are you actually?
I'm in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Amazing. Never been, but would love to visit.
Okay, so cool. When you get here, let's say when, I'll cheer you on at whatever performance you're doing, and then we'll go for drinks or coffee afterwards. How does that sound?
Let's do it. Sounds amazing. Sounds amazing.
So, Eli, at what point as a child or teenager did you have this inspiration to think to yourself, I want to be in this world, this music world? And how did that journey progress?
I think it started out by me being obsessed with music in general. Like before I started making music, I always had an obsession with like collecting records. I mean, it was already like digital when I started collecting, so I don't have a CD collection, unfortunately, but I've always been a huge fan of having a big database of music on my iPod. Actually, that was the days before Spotify. I was part of some bands when I was like 12, 13, but I was really bad. I couldn't play any instruments.
Yes.
And I wanted to be the singer of the bands, but my singing voice is terrible.
Yes.
That didn't really work out, and I actually got kicked out of bands. So I had the pleasure that I had electronic music in my family. Like that was definitely part of what I grew up with. And both my stepdad and my dad and my stepmom were like actually making electronic music when I was growing up. So I had like my entry point there, and then it was just a matter of time. And me actually discovering Skrillex.
Yeah.
Where I was like, hey, that's like some crazy stuff, and I want to get into that. And I realized that at one point that you can actually make a career out of electronic music. And that was where I was kind of like crazy, and where the spark initially started. But that has been like, it's been a while since then, like 15 years almost.
Was it easy for you to dive into that world and understand how to create in it?
I would say my entry point was quite easy with like having people so yeah. close in my family to get started. But then like progressing forwards, it was kind of like, I would say, the usual way of just like deep diving into the whole topic, watching YouTube videos, kind of that the like the normal answer you would get. And I think a lot of us, like music producers, have YouTube as our main source. Then just, progressing forward, you start learning more from people you meet, like other producers, like you start working with, like that kind of journey. And it was quite a straightforward process, like a linear way of learning how to make music, understanding how the music industry works, and then in recent years, understanding how social media works, as this is like one of the very important things right now.
It sounds like in this industry, that production and in this sort of electronic world, it's very open and welcoming, and the producers like to help each other and collaborate with each other from my discussion or hearing from you and with others. Is that true?
100%. I think we have a big culture for doing collaborations. Like, I think maybe more than in any other genres. Like, if you just look at my profile, I have like tons of like tracks where either another artist is featured or another singer is featured. Of course, like singers is something that you will find quite usually because I can't sing. That's a big thing in the world of electronic music, and I'm quite happy about it because it like motivates a lot. Like when you start, making those connections and you start being able to like work with a lot of other amazing like producers and DJs, and yeah, just let stuff grow together, and also, it always su supports each other. Like when you're doing collabs, your name is gonna be in someone else's fan base and vice versa. Or sometimes, big artists collab with smaller ones because they really like their music. There's like definitely a good way to grow just from collaborations, I would say.
How do you choose who you want to collaborate with? Is it a situation of like, ah, I like this artist, let's approach them. Do they approach you? What is the process?
I would say both. There are a lot of artists that have inspired me in the past or are inspiring me right now with the stuff that they are doing. That's where I usually then reach out and ask, maybe let's do something together, and then of course you get a lot of requests, and then I think it really comes down to what kind of songs you get sent. If someone comes around with an amazing idea, obviously I'm always like open to like collaborate with them. I think that's most of the time actually the starting point. Like someone has like an idea or a song, maybe they're just missing a few of the last bits to finish the song or something, and then they reach out to you and be like, hey, you want to finish this together, or like, hey, I think this song could work really well with your fan base, like let's do something there. Yeah, so that's how it, I would say, it usually comes around. And then sometimes it's also management and labels who are sending around songs, kind of like music industry, I would say. That's still a cool way, and also a cool way to connect with other artists, because sometimes my manager, he has sometimes ideas that I would never come up with, and then that's also a great way to form a connection.
So a situation whereby there's been an artist or collaborator that you've looked up to in the industry, and now all of a sudden you're collaborating with them in the same room. Have you ever had that situation of like, is this actually happening? Imposter syndrome, all those type of things? Or do you just say, okay, I've laid down the groundwork, I've built the bricks to the house. This is just now creating the roof and for the next part of the house.
I had a few of these situations where I was literally sitting in the studio with people that I was like even fanboying like 5 years ago, which has been amazing. Luckily for me, those people they have always been like super nice, so there was never like any kind of weird situation or something like this. It was more like they felt really appreciated when I told them like, yo, I was like listening to your stuff 10 years ago, and I was like a big fan of what you did back then. There has always been a lot of appreciation for that, and I feel like that for me, all of the connections that I'm making right now, it really feels like, luckily for me, that most of the people I meet, they're really down to earth. I can name examples like Timmy Trumpet. He's one of the biggest names in the industry, and we have a song together, and he got me to like play the song with him live on two occasions. One of them was actually when he came to Berlin. It was really nice because he even reached out to me and told me like, yeah, I'm in Berlin, I'm playing a sold out show here. You live here, why don't you stop by and we play the song together? And when I was in the backstage with him, he's like the sweetest guy. He's literally the sweetest guy. It's not like, it doesn't feel like you're talking to like, you know, like someone who wouldn't even look at you. He's like so down to earth, so cool, so appreciative. I luckily have a lot of these experiences.
The thought process that I have is when I'm interacting with people is that we all use two-ply toilet paper. There's no gold-plated toilet paper. So the same way I'm interacting with you, the same way I speak to the lady at the shop counter, the same way I speak to that person there, because we're all the same, we're all equal. And I think a lot of people separate themselves from others in situations, even at the company, the CEO or the top managers or Timmy Trumpet, to think, oh, they're separate to me because they've got this sort of label. But it's not that. And it's lovely to hear that they perceive that from the other side as well. Not everyone does, but it's great to hear that.
I 100%. I love that philosophy that at the end of the day, we are all the same species. You know, we are all just human beings, and just because someone took different decisions in their life than me, you gotta respect it 100%. And like as you said, I would talk to someone that I randomly meet on the street the same way that I would, like trying to always bring the same amount of respect to every human being. For me, like it's that's definitely number one in my philosophy, to like treat everyone with respect. You know, like when I'm being booked to a show, and I'm coming there, every person that I'm interacting with deserves the same respect. You know, it's like I think that's such a shitty thing to do if you like disrespect someone at a gig just because he's, you know, I don't know, maybe he's just like taking care of the artist management and you feel like you wouldn't respect that for some reason. That's a shitty thing to do, like treat people with respect. It's so important.
Exactly. What you put out there, you receive. I totally agree with that. Now,
100%, 100%, yeah.
how do you prepare or create your set for your shows? Is it a combination of your own tracks and other people's tracks together, or only your own? How long do you, in advance do you prepare? Let's dive into your set.
The question of how long is a fun one because it might be an hour before the set.
Okay. Does that stress you out?
I think the set, how it is right now, the way it is because there has been a lot of work into that over
Okay.
like almost like the set I'm playing right now. I think I've almost been started building that over a year ago and just like continued working on it with every show that I'm playing. I try to play mostly stuff that I somehow put my hands on. I have a lot of commercial like vocals and like riffs that people would recognize. I have a lot of those in my set, but I try to like either do my own edits with these vocals or with these riffs to give the crowd, you know, something they haven't heard before, you know, to have like this moment. Oh, I know this song, but I don't know this version, and I giving them a wow moment. And then I also like try to stick to my lane, like genre wise. I have like my influences. I have my the BPM that I like to play on, and I try to fit everything down that lane and present like a product that makes sense at the end of the day. And then of course I have some tracks from friends or literally stuff that I find on SoundCloud. in my sets, which are always like guaranteed banger. I have those in my sets as well. And that's the thing why I usually don't prepare like a week for one show, because the set's there and I just try to bring in like maybe 2 to 5 new tracks to every new set that I play. So it kind of keeps on like go, like I try to perfect it with every show that I play. Like when I play a show and I feel like these 5 tracks were kind of the lowest energy, I might try to swap them or skip them. Or yeah, that's my approach.
So naturally performing at sort of like a bigger festival compared to sort of a smaller venue or club and headlining, you bring your same amount of energy and interaction with that. What are the differences for you for in those different scenarios?
To be honest, not so much.
Okay.
Like, I feel like when you know it's like a kind of daytime festival show, you might. Well, there is one thing you got to take care of, like, especially if you're doing a festival, you always have to take a look at the lineup there, because there's definitely going to be more artists. If you're on a certain stage, there is a chance that you might have another song from that artist in your set. You're definitely going to have to throw that out, because you know that's like a golden rule. Like, never play the songs of another artist who performs literally at the same festival. And then you know, like if it's daytime sundown, there might be some other tracks that would work, but generally I think I would kind of play almost the same set. Maybe, you know, if it's a daytime festival, you have sundown, you might be able to bring in more like more emotional moments to like have these big, just more feel it. And then in the club, it would be a bit more forward, more driving tracks, clubby tracks. And the emotional stuff might not always work so well in a club, but generally the set won't be like a complete turnaround from club to festival. It will be quite down the same lane for me, yeah.
So being a performer or a DJ in these different venues, it's very important to understand or read the energy of the audience. So that aspect, is that always been easy for you? Has it come naturally, or have you developed that over time?
I would definitely say it was something that came with time, because it's not something you can watch YouTube videos on. Or
Yes.
maybe there are some,
Maybe
I'm not sure,
yes.
but like
I think you need more hands-on in-person experience than a YouTube video can assist with.
yeah, I think so too. Definitely 100%. So I think the great position that I'm in at the moment is that when an organizer books me, they kind of know what they're getting. They book me as an artist and not like as a entertainment DJ, you know.
Yes.
Like I kind of like expect the organizer to promote events in a way that I would have a crowd there that kind of works with what I'm doing. But like nonetheless, my set's quite commercial, so I think even though if you don't really like the genre of my sound, I could still give you a few nice moments there. The main thing that I'm doing during a set is I literally look into the crowd most of the time. Like I don't really look much on the decks, only when I'm mixing, of course. Otherwise the transitions would be really bad. I'm having eye contact with the crowd most of the time, because I want to see what they're vibing with. And then depending on that, sometimes, or like what I'm always doing is I'm gonna like sometimes skip tracks where I'm like, okay, this is definitely not the vibe for today. So that's kind of the flexibility that I have. But if I would be at an event and the organizer would want me to play, let's say Afro House, for example, like really slow house music, vibey stuff, that would be definitely a problem. But so far it hasn't happened yet, because they always know what they're doing, the organizers. I mean, they're spending money, so they kind of know what they're doing. Usually if an organizer would have like a totally different scenario, he would like send a brief before. but that rarely happens actually.
I should hope they know what they're doing. Sometimes they don't, and you just want to
Sometimes they
hit
don't, but
them.
like for me right now, it was now always fine, I have to say.
I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, it's an energy exchange to say thank you to you guys for all the hard work that you do. I'm unsure if you're aware that vinyls, CDs, cassettes are in a massive comeback around the world. Vinyls, a couple of years ago in the UK alone, 5.9 million sales. Last year in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on. And there needs to be a certain amount of exchanges every day for this for a product to be in this basket. And because of the upsurge of CDs again, CDs are now back in that basket. And the research is showing that it's the teenagers that are diving into this world, the younger people,
Oh, really?
not the older nostalgic people. And then we've also got the streaming platforms that people consume music on. What are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
To be fair, what you just said is new information to me and exciting information. To be fair, I haven't really dug into vinyl CD sales recently. What I've been doing has been really streaming focused because it is the main market. I personally, I think if especially the young generation starts buying like CDs again, that's a great sign. And I feel like it makes sense in a way that it's like a physical layer to you being a fan of a project, because nowadays everything's so digital. And the thing is, like, if I compare it to back then when I was starting to like collect stuff for my iPod, it kind of felt somehow even special to have some digital copies of a CD on my iPod, because not everyone had it, and there were no streaming services. So it kind of was like, yo, I have this really cool album on my iPod, and it was something special, you know, like something you could almost like flex with. It's cool. And I guess like with everything now being digital, like you can't flex with you having a playlist saved on your Spotify. Like literally everyone can do that by one click, nobody cares. So I guess probably that's why they're starting to do it again. And I hope it's gonna grow, because CD sales are obviously a great thing for artists. Generally, what I've been observing the past 2, 3 years, there was definitely a big change in landscape, and that is Spotify traffic, or generally traffic from DSPs, is now coming more from social media compared to coming from the platform itself. You know, like I think when Spotify first came around, like people started to discover music on Spotify a lot, because you had like tastemaker playlists and like third-party playlists. There were a lot of ways that people could dig into new music, and like obviously algorithms and stuff. What I'm seeing is that those kind of sources, they go down a lot. So I feel like Spotify playlists, like even the official ones, don't have as much weight that they had like maybe 3 years before. And now a lot of the traffic that's coming to DSPs is because people find the songs on social media and then they want to listen to it. And then they go most of the time to Spotify or to any other DSP. And that's where a lot of new music is being discovered. So it's kind of the landscape kind of shifted that. If you want to convert new traffic, like the way to go is through social media.
It's interesting how everything changes, but I'm still that person who like the younger kids, I'm enjoying my CDs. So I'm grateful that they're coming back. What's coming up for the rest or for the next few months? What's happening?
You mean in the whole world or for
No, with
me?
you. With you.
Because I was about to say, I have no idea. I'm in the lucky position to have the most packed tour calendar that I ever had in my life this year. And that's thanks to a lot of people obviously listening to my music and enjoying it a lot. That's a big factor, and I have a great team around me. I have great agents who managed to like book me a lot of shows around of Europe, and now it's starting to go international, which is a dream coming true. So I've just been to Australia a few weeks ago, and I'm doing Canada for the first time in my life. I'm doing the States, which is still a secret, but I'm doing my first US shows this year, which is a like even a bigger dream coming true because it's such a like great market to get into, especially if you're like from Europe. I think my first Asia show is planned, and that's kind of stuff that I'm really looking forward to. And what kind of makes the whole thing that's happening with like all of my numbers literally going up so well, it kind of brings everything to reality, being so far away from your home and being able to like play shows there so far away. That's an amazing thing.
So you just need to tell your organizers that South Africa's next.
Yeah, I had a lot of people asking me to come down to South Africa, but like it hasn't happened yet, but
Yes.
I would love to.
We'll
And I
keep.
think you have a good festival scene, right?
I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 5 years, 5 hours, 5 minutes, I know your answer will be different. Just top of mind, quickly, if you had to push play to five other artists, once you finish this conversation, who would those artists be? And if you can think of specific songs, what songs would you play?
Let me pull up my Spotify.
That's fine.
Okay, so on top of my head, there is one DJ do producer do who they make my most favorite like tracks in my sets, like stuff that I play live. They're called Too Hot to Play, and they're like based here in Berlin.
Okay.
I think they are making a kind of music that just is exactly what I like to play. Like they just literally, it's just 100% kind of a perfect mix between enough commercial that it works for the crowds that I play, and it has this certain energy that just makes me go wild. Another one that I just recently did a remix for, he's called Chigits, Chigitc, set.
Yeah.
Literally the song that I remixed was the reason why I kind of went like, this guy's amazing, because I fell in love with with his original song, and it was a really nice coincidence. We requested to remix it, and they were like, yeah, we're doing remixes right now anyways, and so I became part of his remix EP. So he's a guy from, I think he's based in New York, and he's been inspiring me. Like I think he's just doing amazing stuff right now. Then another one that comes on top of my head is a DJ called Sulan. She's been exploding on social media, and she just released her first song, which I totally love because I just literally listened to it in the car today. It just came on my Spotify album. I was like, oh, it's Sulan. I just mostly know her from social media. She inspires me a lot. With like I think she has a way of making like DJ content work extremely well on social media, which is good for all of us.
Yeah.
If she can do it, you know, it just builds the ground for all of us to have content in that style work. So Sulan, I think she's gonna be one of the biggest acts very soon. I
Okay.
mean she already is on that rise like crazy, and I think she's gonna be one of the very big headlining acts. I think she's also American based.
If you could just give me like a message to the fans as a final message.
I'm extremely grateful for every single one who ever press play on one of my songs, or who watched one of my TikToks. That's just something that makes me being able to do what I'm doing right now, and it makes me a very happy person. And also to everyone who's coming to my shows, and a lot of like happy faces that I see in the crowds, that just gives me all the energy like nothing else could give me in life. So I'm just really grateful for that. And everyone who is listening to that, I hope to see you either at a show or write me on Instagram. If you're listening to my music, I'm always responding and I'm always happy to, see you and get messages.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.